Hello and welcome to the Las Vegas Fans UK podcast. Please note this podcast is opinion based and any conversations or answers given within should be taken subjectively, and particularly with matters regarding immigration, passport, anything serious, please do double check all the information. Welcome to the first ever Las Vegas Fans UK podcast. My name is Duncan Price and I'll be your host for the discussion today. I am actually the person who started the Las Vegas Fans UK Facebook group page, which I hope all of you are enjoying, and more than likely you've arrived here at the podcast via that page, so thank you all for your continued support. Very first of all, I'll briefly say why I started the page, what made me sort of get everything going. I love Las Vegas. I love going to Las Vegas. I've been 7 times now, about to go for the 8th in a few days. Woohoo, go me. And I joined on Facebook several groups that were international groups, so they featured people from around the world who love Vegas, and that was fantastic. But I found whenever people were asking for information, you'd get very varied responses, because you'd ask about flights and you'd get responses from people who were within the US, maybe in Europe, but not in the UK, or maybe people from Australia, something from that, and it was just difficult to sift through all the information to find stuff that was actually valuable. So I thought that there was a gap that could be filled via Facebook, which is where people from the UK who wanted to travel to Vegas could get information and obviously also talk about it and discuss it. So hopefully that's the role we're fulfilling. And obviously part of doing that is looking at new things we can do, new ways we can interact with people. So I thought maybe do a podcast in the future. It could be YouTube videos, anything like that really, but we thought give this a go and see what happens. So before I begin, just a big thank you to everyone who sent us questions in. We did do a giveaway which involved submitting a question for this podcast, so thank you to everyone who entered that. That was really helpful in gaining some things to talk about, so appreciate that a lot. So I think we might as well just go straight into the questions, seeing as that's, I guess, what everyone's here for. Not to listen to me ramble on about how much I love Vegas, although that could be a podcast in and of itself. So we're going to take our first question on here is from Sandra Smeaton. Now, I want to say, if I mispronounce anyone's name, I very highly apologise. I'm just going to go with what I think, and if it's wrong, you can always let me know later. My DMs are open, as they always say. So Sandra says, for first timers or those who missed it the first time they went, might be good to explain signing up for players cards, how to do it and how it works, e.g. which casinos are linked, etc. I know heaps of people who have been to Vegas who didn't know about it or even how to get stuff comped. You could probably do an entire podcast on that one subject alone. Okay, so that was the question from Sandra. Very, very good question. I have to admit, this, it should be an area of my expertise, but it really isn't, because I don't gamble a lot. Shock horror. Everyone's going to be amazed now. No, I mean, some people do go there for the gambling. I can get behind that 100%. I have a little dabble on the slots, but I don't gamble anywhere near enough to warrant sort of getting a lot of stuff comped. However, you don't have to gamble to acquire comps and things like that. There's lots of different ways, and what I'll just go through and tell you, here we go. So basically, different groups of casinos or different ownership groups of casinos, say like the MGM group, so they have the M Life card. There's a group Total Rewards, which is like Bally's, Paris, Las Vegas, Harrah's, things like that. So it's essentially like a card that it's kind of a, like a loyalty card in the best possible way of explaining it. If you go to Tesco's and you buy all your stuff, they give you a little bit of something back on your card, and then obviously you can exchange that for club card tokens, etc. This is a similar principle, but instead of obviously buying your shopping, it's gambling, eating, drinking, shows, etc., etc. I do believe gambling is probably the biggest generator of points to your card, but someone may correct me on that. So essentially, you arrive in Vegas. If you haven't got one already, you go to into the casino, and they will have a desk somewhere around, normally quite well signposted, where you can go and sign up for a rewards card. As I say, each different sort of group of hotels will have their own type. So for instance, okay, so I've gone through a few of the total rewards. So MGM with their M Life, so that would be Bellagio, MGM Grand, Mandalay Bay, Mirage, Luxor, those hotels. Those are the two main ones, Total Rewards and M Life. But they do have, if you go a bit further afield or you're going sort of to the outskirts of Vegas, there is one called the Boarding Pass, and that's for the station hotels, so Palace Station, Boulder Station, Texas Station, all the station hotels. And also I think Red Rock as well are on there as too. Then we have B Connected, which includes some of the downtown hotels. So that's Orleans, Gold Coast, Suncoast, Sam's Town, Main Street Station, California Hotel, and Fremont. So I don't think all those are downtown, but a few of them are. So that would probably be where you would get that one. Then you have the Wynn Red Card, so that's valid in the Wynn and the Encore. And then you have the Club Grazzi, I think it's pronounced, which is the Venetian and the Palazzo. So hopefully I've roughly explained that. Like I say, at the most basic level, think of it as a loyalty card. The more you spend in and around those hotels, and in particular gambling in those hotels, the more you will get back in what they call comps. Now, this could be show tickets, it could be food vouchers, it could be free overnight stays. If you gamble a lot, it might even cover your whole stay, but obviously that's going to depend on how much you gamble, where you're staying, etc., etc. So hopefully I've explained that properly, and you know, you guys can go away and investigate that some more. There's a very good website. It's www.lasvegas-how-2.com, and then if you look on there, one of the sections is called Players Club Card, and that is really good for information, gives you a whole sort of coverage of everything they do and who's in what group and everything like that. So highly recommend that there for you. So the first question on this section, so second overall, is from Ruth Bambury. She says, would like to ask about age and pool parties. Would you consider going in late 30s, and also, is it all skinny wenches? I'd love to go, but not sure if my self-esteem would cope. Well, Ruth, I would never suggest that anyone should preclude themselves from these things, whatever they look like, to be brutally honest with you. However, there is a little bit in what you say and suggest, which is that the older you are, and perhaps the skinny, how skinny you are, does factor into things. What I would say is the main clientele for these pool parties is going to be between sort of 21 to 35, I would say. And people will go when they're older and whatever, and that's great. I absolutely 100% applaud that. However, if like me, your self-esteem, your self-image isn't fantastic, it's not going to particularly change that opinion, put it that way. It is, as I say, mostly sort of 21 to 35-year-old, relatively skinny, relatively attractive, women mostly. They will let men in, but normally it's kind of like it's a bit like the clubs. They prefer a higher women to men ratio. They're not being particularly politically correct in today's day and age, but they do kind of towards that kind of demographic. So what I would say is, if you are one of those, I'm just going to go for it, I don't care what anyone else thinks, I stand up and applaud you, and I would say give it a damn good go. However, if you're a bit like, oh, you know, are people going to be sort of looking at me, and it, you know, you're going to be concerned, what I would say from my experience is, if you feel like that going in, you're probably going to feel like that while you're there, and then obviously you're not going to have such a good time. So Ruth, I would say if you're brave, go for it. You know, you've got nothing to lose. I'm sure, you know, all the things that you know, people who think like I do go against you. I'm sure you'd be absolutely fine. So I would say give it a go if you're brave enough. If you think that you probably wouldn't have a good time or you're going to be concerned while you're there, there's a ton of other things you can do that will probably make you feel more happy. Hopefully I've explained that well enough, but you know, as I say, it's all about how you feel about it, Ruth. And you know, as I say, I'd stand up and applaud you if you want to go for it. Specific pool parties, they won't have age ranges, but you could perhaps look at ones that might sort of cater to a slightly older clientele. So perhaps it's you know, one where they have a higher entrance cost or the drinks cost more, something like that. I'm not saying that that would mean that, you know, the clientele improves, but you know, obviously the cheaper they are and the bigger they are, you know, the more sort of intimidating they can become. So but hopefully, as I say, Ruth, you know, give it a go if you feel like that's something you want to do. Okay, so the next question is from Janice McIntosh Jeffrey. She says, since this will be my first visit to America, what advice would you give first-time travellers with regards to immigration, arrivals and departures and transfers? Which is a very, very good question, especially for someone going for the first time. Obviously, you'll need your passport, you know, I think we can all take that as a given. But you'll also need either an ESTA or a visa. So you'll need one of those that is valid for your trip. Most people will be able to get an ESTA. You can apply for those online. Just make sure you follow the official link, because there are a few unscrupulous companies who will say that they'll process your ESTA for you, but they'll be taking some money, extra money, because of that. So do stick to the you know, the main official government US government website for that. If you can't get an ESTA, don't panic. Chances are you may be able to get a visa. That will involve a visit to a consulate, though, so obviously not ideal. But if you have to, you have to. But you'll need one or the other. You cannot, I think actually now, they will not let you travel without a valid ESTA or a valid visa. So they used to do it on the plane, and then obviously that resulted in a lot of people getting turned away. So now they do it all here. You must ensure you have that before travel. Immigration, so we're talking about obviously when we land, it really is a sort of a toss-up as to whether you're going to be there sort of 30 minutes or 2 hours. It just depends, a lot like it is on any holiday, how many other planes have landed, how many other people are going through that part of the airport. You know, just the regular, you know, you're going to be in some sort of queue more than likely, unless you're first off the plane and no other planes have come in. But it can go quite quickly. It does move quite quickly, the line, but it's just, you know, the sheer volume of people. One tip I did have in regards to immigration, and please don't be grossed out by this, but if you can, go to the toilet about an hour before you land, because what happens is everyone gets off the plane, thinks they need to go to the toilet, there's a massive queue for the toilet, and basically, you know, the whole thing takes sort of 3 or 4 minutes. Now, what happens is if you've been just before you get off the plane or just before they you know, put the seatbelt signs on, is you don't need to get in that queue. You don't need to waste that 3 or 4 minutes. So you actually get a 3 or 4 minute head start on everyone who gets off the plane and thinks, oh, I must nip to the loo before I get in that giant queue. So it sounds weird, and I probably have overanalyzed it, but seriously, I have walked off the plane with people and been in a sort of queue of 100 people and looked behind, and someone who got off the plane exactly the same time, or maybe even in front of us, are 100, 150 people back from us, or from me, because they've had to stop to do something. It really is that cutthroat. So that's going to sound like a weird tip, but if you want to get a little bit of a head start on the immigration queue, then that's my recommendation. In terms of transfers, you've got lots of options once you land. Literally outside the terminal is the taxi rank, and that is going to be attractive to a lot of people. I've been hearing a lot about Uber and Lyft. I haven't used them myself. I definitely will at some point on this trip. I've just got a feeling when I walk off the plane, I'm going to be like straight into a taxi and straight to the hotel. And that probably will cost me another $20 or whatever. But, you know, just for the fact that it's straight outside, that's what I have always tended to do. However, if you are, you know, wanting to get an Uber or a Lyft, you can get those from the airport. I believe the rideshare location is somewhere within the parking garage. But obviously, that's something you can just Google. If you're interested, you know, in getting Uber or Lyft, just Google their name and, you know, Las Vegas airport location or something, and it will tell you everything that you need to know. There are also shuttles which you can get. I think there's pre-book and turn up on the day. The only thing with the shuttle is it might save you, you know, again, sort of $20-30, maybe absolute maximum, probably more like 10 or 15 in reality. But obviously you're going to be going around everyone's hotel normally. I think you can get some that go only to certain hotels and, you know, maybe go the opposite end first. But even so, you're on a shuttle full of people with everyone's luggage and etc, etc. It is what it is, sort of thing. And the other option as well is a limo. So you can get those limos. I think, off the top of my head, I've never actually got one, but I think you can get the limos just down from where you get the taxis, I think. Don't quote me on that, but that's the sort of thing. If I was going to get a limo, I'd be doing my research in advance, so I knew what I was kind of getting myself in for. So hopefully that's covered your question, Janice, everything on there. Departures, it's just departures as normal, really, except everyone's much sadder because they're leaving Las Vegas instead of, you know, wherever else they were going to leave from, you know, for their other holidays. So it's quite a depressing place, but I mean, it's got, there's food and there's shops and stuff like that, and, you know, it's just a normal departure lounge, so nothing sort of special about it or anything. But yeah, as I say, a lot of tears been shed in there, I think. So the next question is for Kelly Rex. From Kelly Rex, I should say. Is it possible to pay resort fees in cash and deposit in cash, as won't be planning on charging anything to the room? Thank you. That's a very good question. The answer is it varies, so that's sort of the thing I'll say off the bat. As far as I know, you can pay cash in all hotels for your deposit. Cash is king, as they sometimes say about Vegas. The only thing I would say is I don't know for 100% if that is the case, if that makes sense. As far as I am aware, you would always be able to pay resort fees and deposit in cash, but it would be the one hotel that don't take it that you guys would be staying at. So I don't want to tell you 100%. All I would say is normally you can, but what I would personally do is email or contact your hotel direct and just double check. Most hotels on their website will have an email address, or you can even phone them if it comes to it. So yeah, sorry to be a bit vague on that, but as I say, that's the sort of thing where it's better that I don't say that they will if it turns out they won't, as it were. So yeah, I would say just get in contact with the hotel, let them know your concerns, and you know, they'll be more than happy to help you out. Okay, our next question is from Chris Basu. Why is it if you win a decent prize on a slot machine, they won't accept your driving license as ID, so you end up having to literally run back to your hotel room safe to get your passport? Well, I should be so lucky, I think, is my answer to that, Chris. The truth of the matter is, I can't really tell you because I wasn't there at the time. What I would assume, and this happens in lots of different countries, is that they weren't perhaps familiar with the UK driving license, so they weren't able to sort of verify whether it was, you know, 100% official government issued ID. That would be my guess, I would just say, as long as you got your winnings, I'm sure you were very happy, Chris. I'm sure you were. Okay, our next question is from Jackie Lima. If you only had 24 hours to spend in Vegas, what would be the best things to do? Okay, I thought long and hard about this question, and it is a tricky one because there's lots of things I love to do in Vegas, it's not possible to do most of them all, or certainly all of them, within 24 hours. So what I did was I planned it. That's my area of expertise, is planning. So I've got packed lots in, but I've done it because of the fact that in theory you could do this day. You could literally do this day within 24 hours. So I might have missed off one or two things maybe I would prefer, but if I did them, I wouldn't be able to do them all in 24 hours. So you see, I've put a lot of thought into it. So the first thing I would do is I'd have breakfast at the House of Blues. That's down at Mandalay Bay. Then I would go just up north to the Titanic exhibit at the Luxor. Then I would get the bus downtown. You see, always thinking. I'd have lunch at Pizza Rock. I'd then go round the Mob Museum, which is just off Fremont Street. Then I'd go back to the Strip and have dinner at the Cheesecake Factory. Then I'd go just north again to the Wynn and catch the early show of Le Rev. Then I would walk down from the Wynn to the Bellagio and watch the fountains for an hour. And then I would pop over the road and do the high roller to finish it all off. So I hope that answers your question, Jackie. As I say, there might be one or two things. There might be a meal or two there I might swap in or out. But I just thought when I was writing it, if I was going to do it all in 24 hours, I wanted to kind of give you an answer where it was actually feasible to do all those things within 24 hours. So hopefully that's given people an idea, especially if they're only actually going for a day or 2 days maybe. Okay, our next question is from Ellie Cat. Mine's a funny question. I always find there's so much I want to see slash do that it becomes overwhelming and I end up just running around headless. How do other group members divide or organise their time? Thanks. Oh, thank you for the question, Ellie. Well, I can't speak for obviously all the other group members because I'm sure they'll have their own ideas and, you know, how they sort of plan their time. Or organise their time, as it were. I personally am a massive planner. I plan virtually everything, especially when it comes to if I'm going with someone who's only been for the first time, or if I don't have a lot of time in Vegas. Put it this way, this time when I go, I'm going with my mum. Shout out to my mum. So, and she's never been before. She's actually never been to America before. So I have planned everything because we can only go for 7 days because of work commitments and things. So, and I want to be able to give her a true sense of sort of everything Vegas has to offer. But I've only actually really got 6 full days to do it in. Hence, I've got hotels booked, obviously, shows booked, restaurants booked. I've literally almost booked everything you can. That's not to say that there isn't gaps in there, so we can go and do bits and bobs that we want to do or, you know, fancy doing on the day. But it's just I've kind of made sure that we're able to do everything that I think we should be doing, if that makes sense. So, but what I would say is if I was going with someone else, someone who had been before, say my wife has been with me 5 times, not in recently, but she's been a lot of times before. So she's done all the basics before. When we went in 2012, we didn't book anything except the hotels because we knew our bearings. We'd seen the shows we wanted to see, everything like that. So we just literally rocked up at Tickets for Tonight every day and just thought, you know, what the hell, what should we do today? You know, we'll just sort of wing it. So completely different experience, but again, I think it's equally valid. And probably most people will go somewhere in between. They'll probably book a few things and then the rest they'll kind of leave up to, you know, what they want to do on the day. But that's my kind of take on it. So like I say, if I'm going with someone who's going for the first time or if I was going for the first time, I would try and plan as much in because you want to use your time efficiently. If you're going for a couple of weeks, or especially if you're going with someone who's been before, or you go regularly, then it's not so much about, you know, being time efficient, and it's more about, you know, having a relaxing time, having a nice time, you know, popping here, popping there, you know, wherever you want to go, and you can do it a bit more casually. And I enjoy both types. I love Vegas, so I don't mind planning a lot of it. I don't mind going there and being sort of a bit more laissez-faire about it. But that's how I do it anyway. And, you know, like I said, I think the majority of people will probably be somewhere in the middle. Okay, so our next question is from Sue Ford. She says, what's the rules regarding kids and casinos? Can they stand and watch? Well, I had a look at this. I mean, I kind of thought I knew the answer, and when I researched it, I found pretty much what I thought, which is casinos have a policy of no stopping or loitering in gambling areas. I believe under 21, there's a possibility a couple of them might be under 18, but I would, for a rule of thumb, I would assume no stopping or loitering in gambling areas for anyone under 21. They also have a curfew, which I wasn't aware of, but then again, you know, I've not been at this age. So the curfew on weekdays is under 18s, 10 p.m, and on weekends, under 18, midnight. So just something to be wary of, I suppose. What I would personally do is, if you're going to be in one hotel a lot, you know, it might be the hotel that you're staying in, etc., etc., you can maybe, again, give them a call or an email and just say, I'm going to be in and out of this hotel a lot. What's your policy on children under, or, you know, teenagers under so-and-so? And they'd be able to directly clarify. But as I say, when you're out and about wandering around and going into other casinos and things like that, the rule of thumb, I would say, just to avoid anything, is no stopping or loitering in gambling areas under the age of 21. So hopefully that helps you and you have a nice time. So our next question is from Jennifer Schinner. She was actually our giveaway winner. So this question actually won her a fabulous DVD. I know, glamorous, isn't it? Well, you will start paying for the prizes and then we'll bump the fund up. So Jennifer asks, I'd love to know the best kept secret restaurants, the ones that aren't your usual well-known spots, and an idea of price. Now, this is another one where I'm not going to go massively into it, because I might do another podcast actually on restaurants. And actually, part of the fun is kind of discovering the ones that aren't, you know, so well known or anything like that. TripAdvisor can be quite useful just on a base level. You know, you can look at like the top 100 restaurants in Vegas, and then you can go on a map. So you might be able to spot a few that were slightly off the strip or slightly north of the strip. You know, anything that's not directly on the strip are, I wouldn't call them secret, but they'll be less, you know, less well known, certainly. I would say the best place for sort of restaurants that kind of fly under the radar but are actually very nice is probably the downtown area. Just because some people don't even ever go down there, or people assume because they're a bit cheaper they're not going to be as nice. And actually, by and large, they stack up really well against the ones that are on the actual strip. So I'd say research the downtown area and have a look at some of the best rated restaurants, I should say, in that area. I would say my two down there, or my main one down there, would be Pizza Rock. As I say, it's not really a secret, but it's not directly on, it's not on the strip, and it's not actually directly on Fremont Street. It's just off Fremont Street. So that would probably be my pick for my favourite sort of, you know, below the radar one. There's a lot of good steakhouses down there as well, so do your research on that. What I will throw in, though, just because you asked about secrets, and it is technically a secret, but I'm going to let you in on it, kind of, is in the Cosmopolitan, there is a sort of pizza counter, I think you might say. I wouldn't go so far as to call it a restaurant, because it doesn't have many seats, but it's sort of like a little mini takeaway pizza, you know, counter where you can get a nice slice of pizza, and it is actually called Secret Pizza. So there you go. So there's a good secret for you. I won't tell you where it is, but if you Google it, you'll be able to find out. It's not that difficult. So yeah, good luck with that. Our next question is from Mary Jo Morgan. Do all hotels charge a resort fee? If so, how much a night roughly? Thanks. Well, thank you for the question, Mary. That's a very good one, to be honest with you, because we do get a lot of questions about resort fees on the group, and it is a popular subject. What I would say is 99.9% of the hotels that will come up when you search for accommodation in Vegas will be charging a resort fee, normally between about $25 to $35. There are a few that don't, but they're few and far between, and they're probably not going to be necessarily ones you'd heard of, or you'd have to do a bit more research on them. You know, go a bit more out of your way to find them, as it were. There's a really good website, actually, which lists not only the resort fees, but also the hotels that don't charge resort fees. So I'll give you that address now. It's www.lasvegasjaunt, J-A-U-N-T, lasvegasresort.com, and then you want to find the section on Las Vegas Resort Fees 2018, and that will give you all the information that you need. I think that it was updated relatively recently, so it should be fairly current. And that will just tell you about all the different hotels, what they charge and what's included in that. And then there is also the list on there of hotels that don't charge. But yeah, in answer to your question, do all of them charge? No. But what I would say is most of them do. So be prepared for it, you know, when you're booking your hotel. Okay, so I think that question is going to wrap it up for us here on the first episode of the Las Vegas Fans UK podcast. I have got more questions to go through. Thank you everyone again who submitted one. But what I'll do is I'll try and release them as a few podcasts so that, you know, you don't have to listen to an hour of me wittering on, and you can split it up and listen to them in sort of, you know, half hour, 40 minute chunks. So hopefully that's okay with everyone. As I say, if I didn't get to your question, thank you very much for submitting it. And chances are I'll be answering it in the next podcast or the next podcast or two. Anyway, if you've got any feedback, obviously, please feel free to let me know. This is just kind of the first one out of the gate, so hopefully everything's working fine. You can hear me all right. There's no weird noises in the background, although I can vaguely hear a washing machine going somewhere. So, as I say, hopefully you've enjoyed it, and I'll be back with another podcast very soon. Thanks very much.